Welcome to Talk Is Sheep, the official podcast of the Wild Sheep Society of British Columbia, brought to you by our title sponsor, Mountain Tough Fitness Lab. Come along with us as we take conversations that matter to you into the high alpine. We have partnered with Mountain Tough Fitness Lab to help get you in shape and mentally stronger. Whether you're a veteran hunter just starting out, the Mountain Tough app will take you to the next level. We personally train using the Mountain Tough programs, and we believe in it so much that we want to give you 6 weeks for free using code SHEEPBC. That's SHEEPBC. Check out Mountain Tough Fitness Lab. You won't be disappointed. Well, brother, just coming in hot after the BCWF AGM. How was the weekend?
You know, it was pretty good. A lot of learning about what's going on around the province. They're, you know, it's full of seminars and good dinners and some good people and some good drinks. And, you know, it's a great networking place and got to meet some new people and new faces from around the province. So it's never a bad thing when you get a bunch of like-minded individuals in the same room. What's new with you, buddy?
Yeah. Not too much. It was, I had the weekend off, so I'd done GOABC a couple weeks before that, and so that was a great show to be at. And so now show season's kind of winding down. We're kind of settling into the summer. We got our golf tournament coming up, Jurassic's in August. We got all our sheep counts coming up. Are you making out to any of those this year?
I'm hoping to make out to the Fraser in July and August, if the August one doesn't interfere with Jurassic, because I think it's about time to come down to Jurassic since, you know, being the president now. Might get have to invite myself.
Yeah, no, you're officially invited. You don't have to do the self-invite. I've already told the crew that you're coming. You're going to be our keynote for Jurassic. So, no, we're totally stoked about it. So,
oh yeah, yeah, keynote. That's what. I'll pass.
Oh no, you do a fantastic job, and but no, it's great to have you out repping the brand and, you know, networking and stuff and going to these shows. And, you know, we have all these stakeholders that we work with in the industry. And so just, yeah, great. There was Trappers this weekend. I think we had representatives there at SCI West Coast. So great representative. It was a busy weekend for shows. Everyone was kind of going in all directions, but now it's starting to wind down. Got a few things. I think I'm heading out to the CCFR in May along with VP Southern, and then Chapter and Affiliates in June. I know you're missing that. You got a work conflict that weekend. You were trying to make that show, so I'll have to make it for 2025.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty disappointed. I'm missing the CNAs this year. It was a great time last year with, you know, just being with all those guys and gals, you know, raising money for Wild Sheep and planning for Wild Sheep. And it's neat getting kind of outside of our realm, because our realm is BC. So when you go to that CNA, it's like, here's all of North America and stuff outside of the North America you talk about too. So it's, you learn about everybody else's problems and find out where we can help. And, you know, it's a good place to make friends, so to speak, where, you know, we can share funds for a project and they share funds for a project with us. Like last year with 5 minutes, we raised over 200,000 for sheep in BC. So it's incredible buzz in that room.
Yeah it's pretty amazing for sure. It's a cool event, cool people doing good things for wild sheep, and just, you know, our wild sheep family. Yeah, a couple things that our partners have asked us to share. The CCFR has their AGM in Calgary in May, the end of May. So go to ccfragm.ca, get registered there if you're a member. Shockey's the keynote. So they got a great weekend. And then another thing that's coming up is, so there's the Chapter and Affiliates. It's in Alberta, June 13th and 14th. So if you're in the Wild Sheep Family Network, check that out. That's out in Calgary. Wild Sheep Foundation Alberta is hosting. And of course, the entire Wild Sheep Foundation network of Chapter and Affiliates will be there. And then the following weekend, our good friends over at Grand Slam Club Ovis is hosting a Rocky Mountain Bighorn Symposium and GSCO Canada ribbon cutting. And that's June 20th to 22nd, and that's out in the Kananaskis country. And they've asked me to be their keynote for one of the presentations. I guess not the keynote for the event, but one of the presentations. So I'll be speaking there. So if you're a GSCO member, get signed up for that and come out and hang out with us in Kananaskis for the weekend, and we'll tell some stories and try and raise some money for wild sheep. And GSCO Canada is just getting off the ground so they can celebrate another conservation org that's going to do good things for wildlife in Canada here. So pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, and for those people that haven't heard you speak before, it's kind of worth the price of admission for that show, so it's great.
You're so full of crap. good times.
Man, we got one hell of a podcast, this one, eh? This is one of those ones where you're just going to sit back and hold on.
Yeah. So you'll hear about our experience with that. I had a bit of a personal, I guess it means a little bit to me because of a personal experience, touch a knock on wood, but I'm not connected to it, but I was pretty familiar with it because I was hunting in the area at the time. I've kind of known Justin's story for a while. And then, our former director, Josh Hamilton, reached out and said, "Hey, why don't you have him on the podcast?" We're like, "Frickin' right, so I'm on the podcast." So, this is always good for ratings. And Justin's just a great guy. He tells a great story. And there's a lot of takeaways, a lot of things that I learned. I was taking notes as we were doing this podcast. So I think you're going to just love this episode.
Yeah. It's always funny when you get a bear story and you love to hear them and you hate to hear them because they always hit so close to home.
Absolutely. So with that, we're off to listen to Justin Bentley, and we'll talk about grizzly bears and what it's like to get your head crunched.
This episode is sponsored by our conservation partner, Swarovski Optic. Thank you, Sitka Gear and Swarovski Optic, for investing in healthy wildlife and sustainable ecosystems.
Well, good evening, gentlemen. Here we are on Talk to Sheep. We're joined by Justin Bentley and the man Greg Rensmag's on the mic tonight. So, Justin, welcome to Talk to Sheep. We're really stoked to have you on the podcast.
Perfect. Thanks for having me.
So, just to set the stage, where are you coming in from? Are you up in Dawson Creek, Fort St. John? What part of the world are you tuning in from tonight?
Yeah, from Fort St. John, born and raised out of here. Actually spent my 41 and just about 42 years living out of Fort St. John. Parents got a ranch just outside, about 20 minutes down the Hudson Hope Road there. So very fortunate to grow up in the north, grow up by the mountains, and yeah, still here hanging out.
Right on. So before we got live here, we were talking about sheep hunting. And so early 40s, but kind of a little late to the game for the northern boys in the sheep hunting world, just having been sheep hunting for the last sort of 5, 6, 7, 8 years. What did you grow up doing? Were you hunting big whitetails, or what kind of stuff were you doing before you got into the sheep game?
Yeah, I spent, grew up on the ranch, wandering around out there with a gun, shooting trees and rocks and whatever else. And, as a kid, we had lots of deer. Mule deer were crazy, growing up in the Peace River Valley. So hunted those quite a bit. Actually, when I was 11, shot a 182 muley. So ended up in Buckmasters magazine and a bunch of neat stuff as a kid. And so, yeah, hunted around the ranch, started getting into elk hunting, probably late teens with my dad, as they started to move into the country and stuff like that. Started hunting there. My dad and I, actually my first sheep hunt, I think I was 14. We did about a 3-dayer, loaded up with backpacks, kind of did the first trip into the bush. My dad actually guided for Stone Mountain, prior to me being born kind of thing. He spent lots of time with the Josephs up there. And so when I was 14, decided he was gonna take me up there, and my grandpa ended up sick. We ended up coming out early. We only spent a couple days in there and had a guy fly over us a few times, but my dad kind of recognized his plane and he said, there's something wrong. So we turned around and come out, and lo and behold, my grandpa ended up in the hospital. So I had a little 3-dayer then, and so then hunted around home, and then had a buddy move to Dease Lake. Traveled up there about 3 years in a row, just kind of cruising the Dease Lake area looking for caribou, and seen kind of my first ram up there, and thought it was pretty cool. Sitting in my side-by-side actually on an old road up there, watching him and two ewes cross in front of us, only about 100 yards. He was just wasn't full curl, just a little guy, but it was my first real sheep seeing. And then when he moved back to Fort St. John area, he invited me on just a kind of a quick weekend trip up to Toad River. Worst experience of my life. I had way too heavy of a pack. Was not in shape. I actually remember at one point sitting on the side of the mountain being like, this is the stupidest hunt I've ever done. Like, I can chase deer in my pickup. Like, what am I doing? You know, wasn't happy. Had a sleeping bag, a down sleeping bag blow up on me. Woke up just covered in feathers one night. And yeah, it wasn't the greatest trip. I was not prepared. And so left. Toad River being like, you know what, this isn't for me. And it wasn't a few days later, I was thinking about it, wondering, hey, if I had lighter gear, better prepared, you know, kind of caught that bug. And then 2017 went hard at her, got a bunch of gear, and my father and I went in again together, went and did an 8-day hunt and seen lots of rams, nothing legal, but yeah, spent every year since the little bear attack there, hunting sheep and trying to get out of the Lesson One Club. I'm still there, but hopefully, possibly this year, I can get out of that club.
Yeah, right on. So you mentioned bear attack there, so we're going to dig into that. But before we go there, okay, 182-inch mule deer when you're 11 years old. What the hell? First of all, was it typical or non-typical?
Typical.
So what's book? Is it 180 or 185? I can't remember for typical.
It was 180. I just made book.
Yeah. Jesus, man. Okay. Well, okay. Podcast is over. I've heard enough. Okay. The jealousy factor is a bit high right now. I'm checking out. So 11 years old, man. That's insane.
11 years old, taking the back road to the neighbors for supper.
Okay.
So
just beating most mule deer hunters out there on a whim, eh?
Yeah. Yeah. Just going for a little evening cruise with the old man and stumbled across him hanging out in the field.
Wow. That's awesome. So any contenders since then, or was that the big boy to date?
That's the big guy to date. It wasn't much after that. The mule deer started kind of disappearing around here. The numbers went way down, and you know, there's definitely big ones around. I think I shot one more after that, and I haven't really myself been mule deer hunting too much. I got a daughter that's big into hunting, and she shot she's got two on the board there now, mule deer. So kind of using those deer to get her into it, and she's been loving it, and yeah, it's been good.
That's awesome. Cool. Very cool. So how old is your daughter then? Like early teens or?
She's 18 now. First hunt she ever did with me, we went coyote hunting. She was 5 years old. Buddy smoked a coyote. We were way up a creek, about 4 kilometers up the creek, and that little five-year-old girl tried to pack that coyote all the way out to the truck herself. She fell in love with hunting early, and I told her actually this year that I'm done guiding her. She shot a couple deer. She shot an elk. She shot a bear now. I said, you're on your own. I'm not guiding you anymore. I'm not helping you. You're going to have to fend for yourself. So yeah, she's hunted quite a bit with me. And having my mom and dad's farm just outside of town's been keeping that or making that really easy, just getting out and hanging out there and stuff. And so yeah, she loves it. She's off to college this year. She's actually going up to the Yukon to go up there because she loves the outdoors and stuff, and she can do some environmental sciences up there. So I'm stoked that hopefully she doesn't come back and stays up there, and I get to go visit all the time. And so
yeah, she can see if that happens. Yeah. But
exactly. So yeah,
very cool.
Yeah, so I actually have 3 kids. One's 18, and then one just turned 16. She's got her learner, so she's ripping around and learning how to drive. And my son's going to be 15 here pretty quick. So
awesome, very cool. So a bit of a legacy in the family. There was your grandfather a hunter as well, or just mostly your dad?
Well, my grandfather was a hunter for meat. He was an old school farmer, coming to the country. Well, originally from Dawson and then moved out to Fort St. John, but my great grandfather actually owned the quarter of his field is actually where the Mile Zero post started, or is at today kind of thing. So, my father's dad he hunted around the farm and put stuff in the freezer to eat. And then, my mom's dad, my, grandpa on that side, he loved to moose hunt and stuff and was from Fort St. John as well. And, so I'd go out moose hunting and stuff with him as a kid. Hang out with him, and so yeah, I had hunting on both sides of the family, and kind of just the thing we did. It was lived in a little modular home, you know, not a lot of room. So go outdoors. There's a lot of space outside. So spent a lot of time outside growing up and around the ranch.
Well, you're in the right part of the world to do it, man. That's awesome. So fast forward to 2017, you went on your first sheep hunt and sort of got your acclimated to what sheep hunting's all about. It's all about blood, sweat, and tears, and not a lot of success generally. Did you go on several sheep hunts after that, or do you fast forward? Was 2021 when you had, or was it 22 that you 21 20, that you had your
22? Yeah.
Okay.
It was September 2022. So yeah, I from 17 right to 2022. Hit her pretty hard. I've been every year. I did an October trip, September and an October trip once with kind of my new hunting buddy, newer friend I'd met actually through our kids we met, and he loves sheep hunting, and between him and my dad, I've made a trip every year other than last year. Last year was the first year since 17 I haven't been able to go. So
Okay. So something happened in 22. So let's kind of start from the get go, kind of how you got there. You don't have to put the X on the map for us, but just talk a little bit about sort of what entailed and kind of what led you to ended up in a hospital bed. And I guess, was it Fort St. They flew you to Calgary or something, didn't they?
I ended up in Vancouver in the end.
In Vancouver, but, that's right. It was, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, 2022. It was actually my year I turned 40. So, big year to go sheep hunting. You know, hopefully going to shoot a 40-inch ram on my year I turned 40 was the goal, or was the hope. So organized a sheep hunt with my buddy Dave. We ended up, he's got a couple friends in Fort Nelson, and we hitched a ride up the Tshodi with them. They kicked us out. We did an 8-day sheep hunt, had amazing time. We had amazing weather, seen a few rams, nothing legal, seen, you know, all sorts of other critters. In all of my sheep hunts, it's the only time while sheep hunting I never seen a grizzly bear. We actually made a couple comments of how few tracks we seen in that area. You know, kind of thought we found a hidey hole where we weren't going to be fighting with bears. And so we completed that hunt, spent the 8 days in where we went, come back out to the river, got picked up.
So Justin, did you jet boat in, or how'd you get in there?
Sorry. Okay. Yeah, we jet boated up the river and got dropped off with some friends of Dave's there. Kicked us out, and yeah, we went and did the trip, and then came back, walked back out to the river, spent the night on the river, and the next morning jumped in with them to head back home. Coming back down, one of the guys that we're riding with there, he had the trap line for that area, and he'd brought up some traps he was going to drop off at one of his cabins there for the winter. So coming down the river, stopped at his cabin, tied the boat up, and kind of jumped out of the boat. And, you know, we'd stowed all of our guns, you know, they're all in scabbards, and put away bear sprays all in a barrel so it didn't go off, you know, in the boat. You know, you don't want to get sprayed with that stuff. And so unload a few of the traps. There's four of us in the boat. So we each grabbed a kind of a handful of supplies, walked into the cabin, got into the cabin, opened up the door and went inside, kind of looked around, and chased a squirrel out of the cabin, made a bit of noise. We actually grabbed a couple chairs, threw them outside, and we're just kind of sitting around bullshitting. And Brent, one guy who's the trapper up there, he found a wheelbarrow and wanted to go back to the boat for a second load, get some more traps and stuff off the front of the boat. So he started down the trail, and I jumped up to go lend him a hand, and got out in front of him and was kicking sticks and everything out of his way, just trying to help get the wheelbarrow back to the boat. And cabin's probably, you know, 400 or 500 yards off the river, kind of tucked away. And we got about, I don't know, 60-70 yards from the boat, and I was out front and I could see the boat. Just looked up, and there's a freaking grizzly bear standing at the boat. She was right beside the boat, and I think what had happened, she was coming up river kind of thing. She bumped in the boat right about the same time we bumped into her, and you know, instinct for me kicked in, and I just screamed, "Hey bear, hey bear!" And course, you know, kind of the wrong thing to do. She, you know, I was kind of aggressive and she got aggressive right away. She turned, came at both of us, charged, got, I don't know, 10, 15 yards from us and spun and hit, went back into the bush. And, so she went back into the bush. I looked at Brent, Brent looked at me, and, Brent's like, holy shit, we got to get to the boat. Like we got nothing. We got to get to the boat. And as soon as he let that out or got that out, you could hear her coming back through the trees, like just huffing. And you could tell she was running and bam, she was on me. She grabbed a hold of my arm, got a hold of my elbow. And so the last thing I kind of remember for a few seconds was just seeing her, and she had three cubs. She had that year's cubs with her, and seeing all four of them coming through the bush. And then I think what happened, she got a hold of my arm, pulled me down onto the ground. And I think she actually stood on me because I had a bunch of holes in the back right of my shoulder. And I think when she stood on me, she then kind of reached around and bit my face. So I got a scar that comes pretty much from my hairline right down from the left side down right through middle of my eyebrow. And I think her canine tooth went through like the bridge of my nose and into my skull kind of there. And then it ripped underneath my left eye kind of. So I got like a full bite mark kind of thing right on the front of my face. So yeah, she bit me there. And then she got off me right away. So she got off me and she actually went towards the cabin. Brent went running for the boat and he actually had one of the cubs jump on him. And he ended up having to kind of boot it off with himself. So he kind of said, you know, kind of like a bigger dog kind of thing. But he gave it a couple of kicks. It left him alone. He got to the boat. And I think she must have heard the guys at the cabin, the other two guys there. And she kind of started wandering that way. But my buddy Dave, he'd grabbed an axe. He heard us screaming, bear, bear, bear. And then when we heard her, you know, charging towards us, we were screaming and hollering and, you know, never slowed her down. He'd kind of come that way a little ways. And then I don't know if he could hear her or what, but he turned around and started running back towards the cabin and got back to the cabin, turned around, looked our way and could see her. She had come towards them and she stood up on her hind legs there. And by that time, Brent had got his gun out of the boat. He didn't know where she had went, which direction she went, anything. He fired two shots into the air. And he fired those shots right as she was kind of standing up on her hind legs looking at the other two guys. As soon as he fired those shots, she hit the deck and ran down. There's a little creek bed there, took off with those cubs, and we never seen her again. So she vacated. And so about that time, my memory starts coming back. So first thing I remember, I was face down. I could still kind of see at that time. I could see my left arm. It was all bloody and a mess. And the hood of my jacket had actually come over my head. And as I was kind of moving around, I could feel, you know, like my skull, and I could tell things were not good. You know, I couldn't see very well. And it was, you know, within a couple of seconds, my other eye had kind of completely swollen right up and I couldn't see anymore. So it was, as I was starting to remember, Brent took the shots. I remember hearing the shots. And then he made his way back to me. And I remember feeling him at my feet. Like he put his hand on my foot and he's like, Justin, man, I gotta go back get those other guys. I'm going to actually have to leave you. So, cause he didn't really know where she had went, you know, we were separated. He wanted to kind of get us all together. So I'm like, yeah, I'm hurt. I'm alive, but you know, I'm pretty messed up. But, he's like, okay, I'm going to go get those guys. We're going to get guns and then we'll come assess you kind of thing. So he went to the cabin, got the two guys, Dave and Marty, brought him back. They walked right by me, kind of left me laying on the ground, and went to the boat, got some weapons, and then come back to me then and rolled me over. You know, at that point I couldn't see. They got me kind of rolled over, pushed up against a tree. And once they got me rolled over, Dave and Marty were kind of working on me, and Dave and Brent were working on me. Marty went to the boat to get, you know, in reach, Zoloft, whatever, you know, start that communication thing. And lo and behold, you know, this is kind of where things start, you know, unlucky, but start to get lucky. Jason Palfy from River Jet Ventures, we could hear his boat coming down the river. So Marty got to the back of our boat, got Jason slowed down, and got him pulled in and told him what was going on. And Jason had six guys in his boat. So we had, you know, six more guys coming to kind of help do rescue. And even luckier, in that boat was two firefighters and an RCMP member. So they came over, started doing my first aid, started doing that stuff. You know, a couple more guys on guns, because, you know, we had no idea if she was coming back for a second round or not. And then they, you know, the group started kind of figuring out, you know, rescue. Brent had pushed SOS on his inReach, and Marty, actually being from Fort Nelson, knew, knew his buddies with Quest Helicopters dispatcher out of Fort Nelson. So he started texting with him immediately, and Quest got a helicopter ready, as quick as they could. So it all kind of took place about 4:30 in the afternoon, something like that. So Quest was, knew kind of where we were at, and started texting Marty back saying, like, you know, I don't know if we have enough daylight to fly to where you guys are at, load up, you know, and head back. You know, I don't, they were saying like they weren't sure if they were going to be able to make it in there and get me out. So I remember, you know, laying there, talking with the firefighters and stuff like that. And I could hear the guys kind of out in the back, you know, they weren't right beside me, and I could hear them talking like, okay, we got to make a decision. Like, we got to make a fire. We got to get them back to the cabin. You know, we might end up having to stay here tonight, you know, not sure what to do. And I hollered like, no, we're not, nobody's spending the night here. We're going to get out of here. I said, get me to my feet. I'll get to that boat. You know, I'll boat out if we have to, but I, at that point I wanted out of there. I wanted everybody else out of there. You know, who knows if she's coming back, right? So, so at that point I got talking with the firefighters and stuff, and they're like, okay, like, your legs are all good. My arm was pretty messed up. They put my arm in a sling, got me to my feet, and I walked to the boat. And then, just with everybody kind of around me and stuff, I actually ended up having to walk over Jason's nose of his boat, you know, down the steps. And he had like a office chair in his boat that he sat in and stuff. So they got that set up in kind of the middle of the boat, put me in it, put Dave on one side of me, one of the, I can't remember if a firefighter or RCMP member on the other side of me, got kind of all loaded up. And what Marty had, kind of set up with Quest was, we'll start down the river, you guys start flying. If you guys, you know, if until you guys, you know, have to turn around, keep coming up the river, we're coming down the rivers. So we had to go down the Toshodi, then onto the Musquaw kind of to get home. When we see you, you know, you find a landing spot, we'll beach the boat and we'll load them in your chopper kind of thing. And it actually, we met right where the Toshodi and the Musquaw kind of dumped together. So it was Jason. I actually grew up with Jason Palfy playing hockey. I still play hockey with him today. And, you know, he was telling me coming down the river, you know, we're going left, we're going right. He's like, hold on, Bentley. Like, and I remember getting kind of motion sickness and all the stuff because I couldn't see, didn't know, you know, kind of which way we're going or not. And trying not to get sick. And Jason, I could hear him like, it's going to be soon, Bentley. We're going to see the helicopter. We're about to dump into the into the Musquaw. And just as he said that, I could hear the helicopter fly over us. And so it flew over, landed. I got up, got out of the boat, got into kind of, I don't know, one of those little litters or whatever the heck you call them. Like, strapped me into it, slid me into the helicopter, and flew me into Fort Nelson. Got out of the helicopter into an ambulance there, and then into the hospital in Fort Nelson. I spent, I don't know, a couple hours there, I think. They sent a medevac up from Vancouver, picked me up, took me back to Vancouver eventually. But so that's how I got out of the bush. That's kind of the gist of the story, I guess. So, yeah.
Holy shit, man. So let's back up, and when, you know, you obviously seen the bear, she took off, you remember her coming at you. Did you ever see her when she hit you? Like, I obviously lost your memory when, you know, you blacked out or whatever, but what are sort of the last memories of that before you got hit?
The last, like, when it first happened, or when I first got home and started kind of talking about it, I thought I could kind of remember like her actually crunching, like, I would say like I could remember bones breaking. Today I don't think I really remember that. Last thing that's in my mind is just her with those cubs lined out behind her, and like, you know, she's within yards of me kind of thing. It's probably the last thing I remember. And then the first thing, you know, was looking at my arm, and my grandfather was was a rancher, had cows, hated bears. And first thing that kind of come to my mind was, I'm not dying from a bear. There's no way my grandfather's gonna let me die from a bear. Kind of, you know, as I started to move around, move my legs, you know, try to figure out what was kind of hurt. And but yeah, the last thing I remember was seeing the four of them coming through the bush, and it very vividly, you know, just one right after the other, and then bang, she was, you know, on me, and it was seconds. Like I never, my mind never computed quick enough to, you know, get behind a tree, get behind the wheelbarrow, run to the boat. Like I never had, any of that time to defend myself, to think about putting my arms up, nothing. It happens so quick.
Yeah. Anyone that ever would question that is just like, are you a fucking idiot? Like literally you have like literally a millisecond, right? It's just like, you have no time to make any decision. And even if you did decide to act, it's like, you know, the chances of you getting to where you need to be, that's going to protect you anyway. And if she's on a mission, she's going to get you no matter what, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like the power in her, the quickness in her, you know, you see the videos in here and see a bear off in the distance running away. You know, when we're 1,000 yards and they're cutting across a hillside, you know, they look pretty impressive, but get side by side with them and see how fast and how powerful they are. Like they're all muscle. They're amazing creatures.
So when you first woke up, and I know it's not 100% there of the recollection, but was there, like, were you just in shock, or could you actually feel pain? Like, you know, you're assessing, so obviously had a lot of awareness, but was there pain where you're like, oh my God, like I'm hurting like never before, or sort of what was your body feeling?
Shock's a wonderful thing. My face didn't hurt at all. You know, and you know, I had lost a lot of feeling, you know, post-surgery and stuff like that. Like I still don't have feeling in my one cheek, but my face didn't hurt one bit. My arm hurt. When I got moving around or would try to move my arm, that hurt. I could feel that, you know, and I didn't know if I, you know, separated my shoulder. I knew that, you know, there's a bunch of blood and stuff on my arm. But she, so her bite was so powerful. Like her canine tooth went through kind of my forearm. And then I was talking to a guy after, and I was showing him my scar. Like I got a big scar in the back of my, my bicep. And I'm like, yeah, that's from bite. And he's like, well, it's actually not bite, it's pressure. So, you know, it pressured so hard, it actually blew the back of my, my bicep out. So I got a, you know, fairly, you know, 2-3 inch scar in the back of my arm that pressure from her bite just kind of blew all that muscle out the back of it kind of thing. So yeah, that was the only pain I really felt, you know, and head wound, I thought it would have, you know, really bled a lot more. You know, I didn't bleed out. I definitely probably bled, but, yeah, you would think with a head wound, you'd be pretty worried about that. For whatever reason, it wasn't, you know, wasn't a worry or a factor in, you know, in my wounds kind of thing. So,
So tell us what you're thinking now. The bear's come, she's done her thing. You and Brent have reassessed. You've kind of figured out what you need to do. And now he's going to leave you. You're sitting on a freaking trail, absolutely, completely disabled. You can't do anything. And he's like, oh yeah, now I'm going to leave you. And you know, you mentioned it. It's like 300 to 400 yards. You're 60 yards from the boat. So very worst scenario. He's going 250K one way, half a K. It's going to take 10 minutes or whatever. And you're sitting there and there's a bear loose with three cubs. What's your brain thinking at that point?
Do you know, maybe it was a shock. I didn't think about her coming back. That was, you know, I was more in assess mode. Like I was, you know, I was laying face down and I was kind of moving my legs, making sure my knees, like trying to figure out what all was kind of hurt. I spent the majority of the time just figuring that out. My thought never went to her coming back. You know, today, you know, I think about how lucky I am that she didn't come back. How lucky she only bit me twice. And to be, you know, where that canine tooth went through, you know, in between my eyes, like to be a half inch higher probably would have went into my brain. If she would have bit, you know, bit the back of my neck or anything else, or where she was standing on me, you know, if she raked those claws across my back, I mean, she could have done so much more damage. You know, the way it went down, I got extremely lucky in a lot of different ways, kind of thing. So,
So down to Vancouver, you were in Vancouver for quite a while too, weren't you? Like
not on, a week.
Is that right? Eh? Yeah. So yeah. When you went down there, what kind of stuff were they, what were they concerned about? Why'd they send you down there? Was it the head injury? What kind of stuff were they worried about for that?
So we'll back up a little further to being in Fort Nelson. So I'm in the hospital in Fort Nelson, and I'm with it. Like I'm talking to nurses and doctors and stuff like that. And really wanted to phone home. I wanted to phone my wife and talk to her and let her know kind of what had happened. Even when we were still up on the river, you know, I had said at one point, like, guys, you got to message my wife. Like my family needs to know what's going on. And, you know, they're like, no, let's get you going home. Let's get you to hospital before we even alert them. And so they had sent me with my phone, with the helicopter into Fort Nelson and stuff. So I had my phone with me, and once they got me kind of all success or, IV'd and got some pain meds into me and stuff. And, you know, I asked them, I said, hey, I really want to phone my wife. And, they're like, yeah, absolutely. We can. So they unlocked my phone for me and dialed her up, and we're scheduled to come out that day, and she answers the phone, and I'm like, hey, Katie, you know, it's me. It's, I'm in the hospital. I got a attacked by a grizzly bear. And she goes, her initial thing is fuck off. So she thought I was messing with her. And, so anyways, I'm like, no, I truly, I'm in the hospital. And then the doctor piped up, and the doctor's like, yeah, he's in the hospital here with us. You know, he's doing okay. We got to fly him to a major center. We're not sure where we're going to send him. He's got to see, you know, a plastic surgeon. He's got to see a brain specialist. He's got to see an eye specialist. We'll let you know where he's going to go, and then hang up the phone. So that's all my wife has for information. I'm in the hospital. I have to go see those three specialists, and she has no idea, like, you know, the thoughts that must have been going through her mind, right? She's at home with the three kids, you know,
bloody that doctor. Point. That's not bedside manner, dude. Like that doctor, what the hell was he thinking?
Yeah. She was very straight to the point. Like he's got to go see these specialists. We'll let you know where he's going. They didn't know at that point if I was going to Vancouver or Edmonton. So brain specialist, plastic surgeon, and an eye specialist, because, this eye was completely out of socket. Like they actually had to realign like the heights of my eye. Cause, you know, with everything being crushed kind of all underneath, both my cheekbones were crushed. So Saturday the 17th, I think it was, it happened at 4:30, landed in Vancouver at 2:30 AM Sunday morning. And I believe it was like 5 o'clock at night. Sunday night, I went into surgery. So I was 5.5 hours in surgery with all those specialists putting everything back together. And I got like 10 to 12 plates in my head, like all through my forehead. It was all shattered. So they were like puzzling all the bones back together. You know, underneath my eyes, like my cheeks, there's plates all through there. My nose is all plate now. It's funny, I joke, my grandfather, when I was like 5 or 6 years old, broke my nose with a horseshoe. He was playing horseshoes and walked behind him, and I always had that lump on my nose. I'm like, oh, I took a bear attack to get my nose fixed finally. Like it's 5.5 hours with the surgeons in Vancouver to put me back together, and yeah, Humpty Dumpty. So
now, any consequences now? Is there loss of feeling? Is there, you did say there was some numbness in your face and stuff like that. Sort of what's your recovery status now? Obviously, you look freaking amazing, dude. Like I've seen the before and after pictures, and honestly, you got a cap on and the lighting's not perfect. Yeah. And I can see a few scars because you pointed it out.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously listeners can't see. So yeah, that's a scar. It runs all the way from up into my hairline down through my, right between my eyes kind of thing. And then I've got scars that run, you know, across both my eyebrows. And then this one that runs, you know, underneath my left eye and then kind of back towards my, you know, kind of back towards my ear. So, but yeah, I'm pretty healed up. Body's an amazing thing. So I had surgery on Sunday. So Sunday night, Thursday, they kicked me out of the hospital. I had over 100 stitches in my face. They actually said I could go home if I wanted to go home and get, you know, get the stitches taken out at home. Just in talking with my wife and stuff, we decided to stay. So we stayed till Monday. Went back, seen the plastic surgeon on Monday, got all the stitches and everything taken out, flew back home that day. So yeah, I was a week in Vancouver, healing, you know, obviously scars have almost, you know, non-existent. So underneath my right eye, I don't have much for feeling, like my lip, and my gums. I've got no feeling kind of through there. They said it could up to 2 years, feeling can come back. So, you know, it's tingly. It's a weird feeling nowadays. So hopefully it does come back. And then my tear duct. So like not the making of the tears, but where my tears drain into my nasal cavity. Cause that was all destroyed in there. They had a heck of a time building those in the initial surgery. Can't remember when I went back, I don't know if it's 6-8 months later, had a second surgery and actually had a second set of stents. So like little tubes put back into both tear ducts to try to kind of build that cavity so my eyes would drain. So when I get outside in like cold weather, windy conditions, my eyes tear up pretty bad. They overwater is what they do and they don't drain. So went back, had that second surgery, you know, it changed a little bit, definitely got better. But my eyes do get watery and a little bit of feeling not being had, and that's it, man. That's for what I went through. It's pretty minor for, you know, I got fingers and toes, I got my sight, I got my ears, I got a scar that some people don't even really notice. Yeah, pretty fortunate in the end to come out as good as I did, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Let's touch a little bit on the psychological aspect of it. Obviously, there's probably an element of PTSD or the chance for it. You told me, you mentioned earlier, you took last year off from sheep hunting, which doesn't surprise me. I probably would too, maybe a year or two. So talk a little bit about the psychological aspect and talk about where your brain goes now when you think about being back in the bush.
So I've been unbelievably fortunate there too. If you can imagine this, I've yet to have a nightmare about the thing. I have not had a, you know, jerk me out of bed in the middle of the night, scary moment with it. I've been pretty fortunate that way. I am a lot more cautious in the bush. I was just out shed hunting here on Thursday last week, and I step on way more sticks than I ever have. You know, I am not nowhere near as stealthy as I once was. Still got a little bit of, you know, looking over my shoulder and nervousness for sure. But not as bad as I thought. You know, last fall elk hunting, two buddy and I, we bumped into two yearling black bears at like 40 yards, come around the corner of a creek. They just kind of popped out of nowhere on us, and you know, I definitely got nervous, but I didn't, you know, I didn't curl up in a ball and have a little cry to myself. I, you know, kept my composure, and, you know, I look at the PTSD a couple different ways. You know, it's a mama bear doing what a mama bear does. She was scared. She was protecting her cubs. You know, grew up on the farm with cows. It, you know, did the same thing. I got in between them and their calves, and, you know, I get a cow that would want to run over me all the time, right? So, I wasn't food to her. She never came back a second round. She bit me twice. That's it. Like I said, she could have done so much more to me. You know, it's the unfortunate part of, you know, as many grizzly bears as we have in the backcountry now, you know, it's a whole nother probably conversation, but, it's a reality, you know, when you're in the backcountry that you're going to bump into bears. You know, hopefully, you know, outcomes aren't the same as mine, but, you know, for my mind, it's been good. It's been really good. For the guys I was with, you know, once I got hurt, once I got rolled over, you know, as stupid as it sounds, I had the easy part. You know, I didn't have to figure out search and rescue. I didn't figure out how we were going to get out of there. I didn't have to look at my face. You know, I've been kind of toying with the idea of calling the CO service and getting, you know, pictures of what I look like. They took pictures of me when I was in the hospital, just to know what those guys had to see, right? So, you know, Dave and Brent and Marty, you know, the guys, when they first rolled me over, you know, whatever my face looked like. Like, I mean, you can see the scars, you know what would have been opened up and what it looked like. So you can imagine that, you know, what they kind of went through, worried about that bear coming back, you know, worried about us not getting out of there that night. Like, I think it was harder for them on the mindset of stuff than it was for me, because they had that whole extra, you know, layer of stuff that they seen and dealt with, where, you know, once I was hurt, I just sat there and kind of listened to the plan and, you know, that was it. Right. So yeah, I've been pretty fortunate. You know, this, like I said, this year will be my first year back. It might not go that good, you know, the first night in the tent, maybe is the last night in the tent. Very aware of that. I've talked to a guy, I got a good buddy that was in a plane crash. Well, same guy I was going to Deese Lake and seeing and stuff like that. And he hooked me up with a guy, I think he's actually out of Chilliwack there, Jessram. He's a PTSD specialist, does lots of stuff with like RCMP and military, and talked to him twice. And, you know, he's pretty confident I got my stuff together. I'm going to talk to him again before I go. Just talk about some triggers and, you know, things to, if I do start having a panic attack, to, you know, to try to help calm myself down. You know, it's a guessing game on, you know, how I'll react. You know, I feel like I'll be pretty good, you know, with having that little encounter with the bears last fall. You know, it went smooth. It went like no other bear encounter I've had. You know, we backed away, and once we got to what we figured was a good distance, we started making some more noise and they took off. And, you know, it wasn't like I, you know, had a panic attack or, you know, anything severe. So hopefully this year's the same when we go back. So, you know, my buddy Dave, the guy that I was hunting that on that sheep hunt with, he's coming with me. He went back last year. So he got right back on the horse, and, you know, that's what I want to do. I'd lost a bunch of weight. Like, I'd lost over 30 pounds. You know, part of it probably from the sheep hunt itself and then not eating. You know, I had stitches all up in the top of my mouth and stuff like that. And, you know, true redneck, you know, I wanted to get back on the horse. I wanted to be fine, you know, not be hurt. And so it happened in September. I tried to play hockey in January, and I'd lost so much muscle mass that I ended up, I think, you know, from playing hockey and whatever else, I blew a disc out of my back. You know, I think, you know, all the muscle that I had kind of vacated, I'd always had a bad, you know, an issue with my back, but I think that just, I didn't have that muscle holding it, and blew that disc out, and spent, you know, large part of last year just trying to get that kind of sorted out. And, you know, that's part of the reason why I skipped last year. I wasn't healthy enough, you know, kind of learned that I thought I was healthy enough when I first got, you know, back on my feet and feeling good. But, yeah, so still trying to build some muscle for this year, and going to be in probably the best shape I'll ever be in going into the mountains. Lesson learned, but yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Right on. So obviously, Justin, you've lived a life, you've been through this, you've had this experience, and there's a lot that's happened. You know, obviously you learned a ton from this. Can you touch on some of the points that you took away from it? Maybe some of the stuff that, it sounds like you guys did a lot of things right, especially, you know, the guys that were helping you, they were really switched on and they got their shit together. And there was a lot of luck involved, it sounds like, too. But then what are some of the other things you would have changed? What would you have done differently?
Well, it, you know, we let our guard down, plain and simple. We got into that boat and got comfortable. You know, that whole sheep hunt, all 8 days, I had my bear spray, you know, on my hip. You know, you go take a shit, you grab the bear spray, go do your thing, come back. While we were hunting, we were on guard. We had that stuff prepared and ready. And you know, we've always been in that mindset. You know, you get in a boat and, you know, the motor, the river, you know, I feel like I got relaxed. And, you know, I've been in lots of boats, lots of people have, and bail out of a boat and to go to a cabin, you know, out of everything we did on that trip, that was, you know, the least likely bet I would have ever made that we would run into a bear. You know, the final night coming off the mountains, Dave and I probably did 5K in the dark, in headlamps, through buck brush, over and under and around, and all through stuff. Like if we were going to run into a bear, it would have been, it should have been then. But we let our guard down. You know, it's not that, you know, you don't want to be scared in the bush. You don't want to be afraid. You don't want to be, you know, walking on eggshells, but just making sure, you know, and I talk lots about bear protection and lots of people ask me, you know, what I recommend now. You know, from my experience, I'm a big bear spray guy. As fast as it happened, you don't have to be accurate with bear spray, you know, and, you know, to the guys that have the stories where they've shot bears, yeah, unbelievable to me that they were able to get, you know, a good shot off, get a lethal shot off. You know, I, you know, to be that good with a rifle or maybe even just that lucky, I feel like bear spray is, you know, it gets stuck in your holster and you still spray it off. I mean, you might get covered with it, but I feel like the bear is going to, you know, not want to eat you if you're smelling like bear spray, right? So to me, always having my bear spray on me is something, you know, I got a little bit better on my vinyl harness now. My bear spray stays there. And, you know, I haven't been out even to my parents' ranch without it on me. So being prepared, you know, for me, bear spray is my, you know, my bear protection. But whatever your protection is, be efficient in it. So if it's a 45-70, you know, practice, you know. If there's three of you and you know, you got one gun that's your bear protection gun between the three of you, how are you going to handle that? Who's going to grab the gun? How are you going to get the gun? Like, you know, I think that's something that, you know, we talk about, but to practice, put it into good use, be ready for it, right? Like, you know, I'm lucky that I'm here to tell you it happens when you least expect it. So, you know, be prepared. Don't let your guard down. You know, the other thing was my rescue. If it wasn't for the group of people, you know, if it was me and Dave on the side of the mountain and he pushed SOS on our inReach, there's a chance we could have been there for 2 days, 3 days. You know, inReach is awesome. I love my inReach. I love being able to stay in touch with family, but, I think a person, you know, can get a lot better prepared themselves, have their own kind of rescue plan. And I've been doing some research, you know, for this year of kind of what the best thing to do, you know, and whether it's a Quest Helicopters, you know, they, you know, you get with them and tell them where you're going. And hey, if you get a text from me, but what I've come across is STARS, the air ambulance STARS, they're an amazing company. They've got amazing setup. They've got a call center that's prepared to deal with any kind of situation that comes their way. So it's not just a medical aspect of it. Their call center will do, you know, help organize search and rescue. You know, if you don't need a helicopter, they'll call for an ambulance to come get you. The people at STARS, I walked into their Grand Prairie office there and got met by, you know, 11, 12 people. We sat in the boardroom and their care for people's wellness and getting them to hospital it's unbelievable. You know, they're a pretty cool group of people that are just there to help people in need. So, you know, I've been talking with them. They're a little clunky on text messages. You can't just text or call center. You actually got to call them. There's actually a gentleman from Chetwynd. His story's actually on the STARS website. I think, don't quote me, but he was on the Stikine somewhere on a boat and started having a heart attack. And they were texting with a work colleague or somebody saying, hey, we're kind of in trouble. They were all kind of trying to figure out what to do. And this guy just randomly called STARS to see if they could help. And so STARS got looking kind of where the guy was at, figured out, you know, the plan to get to him. They flew from Grand Prairie to Fort Nelson, fueled in Fort Nelson, flew out to site, gathered the gentleman up. He was having a heart attack, so got all the first aid stuff. Like that helicopter's got more things in it than an ambulance. They can do blood transfusions. They can test your blood for any kind of issues that are going on with it. Yeah, it's a pretty amazing machine. But anyways, they got him into the helicopter. They didn't have enough fuel to get back to Fort Nelson, so they went to Watson Lake, fueled in Watson Lake. then back to Fort Nelson, fueled there again, back to Grand Prairie. And in Grand Prairie, they put him in a fixed wing and flew him to Edmonton and saved his life. So, you know, long story short, but this year, you know, I'm going to get prepared with my inReach probably. I'm going to have somebody that'll be around cell service full time. If we end up in a medical situation, you know, that person will be my contact that then will probably phone Stars. They can fly at night. Them and Comox Coast Guard are, I think, the only people, you know, anywhere near the mountains that can fly at night. So their motto is no one's ever too far. As long as they can get fuel, they'll come rescue you. They'll figure it out. So but yeah, I'll get set up with somebody, you know, that's going to be in cell service. If they receive a text from me, they know what's, you know, I need help, and they'll be kind of the middle between myself and Stars. You know, if we end up in another situation like that, or, you know, whatever, broken leg, you know, it doesn't have to be a bear attack, right? There's a lot of things that a sheep hunter can have go wrong up there. You know, I just heard your guys' podcast with Tanis there with her foot getting blown apart there. Like, I'd actually be interested to see who, you know, if they thought about phoning Stars, right, to come get her, because they it actually from Calgary to there probably wouldn't be that far to go rescue her, right? So but yeah, lesson learned to have a little better of a plan. You know, SOS on inReach is a great thing, but you ain't getting out of the bush right away. You know what, they're I think their call center's in Houston, Texas. Essentially, they call 911. 911 then has got to kind of get, and I think their main thing is to get a hold of the RCMP. The RCMP's got to figure out what's going on. I think I was getting in the helicopter when Brent's inReach, so the RCMP were just starting to text him at that point of what our situation was, what was going on, and I was already in the helicopter. So, you know, with the people that I was very fortunate to be with and to get organized, and I mean, they had their shit together to get me out of there as quick as they did. Like, you know, everyone says your scars are, you know, hard to see. And I think it's because of that, because of those guys getting me out. You know, that tissue didn't have a bunch of time to die off, to start receding. They got me out of there unbelievably quick for the shitty situation we were in. And, so yeah, being prepared, like, there's a lot we can do. I think more than just, you know, that comfort of having your inReach in your pocket, right?
Yeah, well said. And I think that's a lot of it. The inReach is more of a comfort tool than anything. And you're absolutely right. I've heard that time and time again, that it's not anyone that thinks they push that SOS button and someone's showing up half an hour later is totally deluded, right? There's no scenario where that happens. Can you talk a little bit about, and not that this is this matters, but I'm more curious than anything, but like the cost and stuff like that. You guys obviously called Quest. Does BC Medical cover any of that stuff? Obviously, there was, you know, you could have died out there. What does that look like, and what kind of costs were you? And if you don't want to talk about that, that's cool too, but it's more than curious than anything. So,
No, it's all good. I don't know who covered the cost of my helicopter ride. I kind of think I know who did. I think at one point somebody told me Stars had actually covered the cost. But my gut feeling is that one of the guys that I was with kind of covered that cost. So medevac to Vancouver, that was covered by BC Medical, all the stuff down there. You know, my trips back though, you know, I went back probably half a dozen times before the second surgery, and then the second surgery, you know, that's all out of pocket. There's a little bit of tax break, but I mean, it amounts to nothing compared to, you know, $1,000 worth of flight and hotel rooms every time you got to go down there. So, but yeah, I think and you know, whether one of the guys covered it or Stars did, but, yeah, fortunately I never had any big bills over the whole thing, but.
Yeah.
Stars though is free. So Stars is you know, not for profit. They are all donation, but they are free. They do that stuff through funding. So they're you know, I more and more I've been talking to the Stars people, the more and more I believe in kind of their mission over there. So they got a pretty cool company going on.
Yeah, we'll have to get this out to our community, Greg, and make sure that sheep hunters know that that's a resource for us in the backcountry, because it's a pretty important tool that we could, it's certainly going to save someone's life one day. And well, they do it every day, but certainly a sheep hunter's life one day, right? So
nine flights last year a day they averaged. Wow.
Yeah.
So they're the four Western provinces, and yeah, and you can actually register with STARS. So you can call them, say, hey, I'm going on a, you know, 10-day hunt. This is where I'm going. These are the people I'm with. You get a, like a registration number or an ID number. So then when that person phones in, that's kind of your contact, they go with that number. They actually even know the area you're kind of planning on being in and stuff like that, who's with you. And I think that's $6 a day is all that costs. Like it's nothing to be pre-registered with them and have it kind of set up before you go. So,
Yeah, pretty cheap insurance, sheep hunting insurance, eh?
Yeah, very cheap.
Maybe Justin, can you just touch a little bit on, you know, you talked about in the moment, the bear was there and it was on you. And, you know, you talked about maybe you shouldn't have done what you did at that time. Is there anything you learned from that? Is there anything you would have done differently? And I know, you know, situationally with bears, everything's it's no situation's exactly the same. There's no textbook play for it. But, you know, in that scenario, bear close, is there anything you would have done a little differently? Or is there anything have you done any research since then to sort of say this is what you should do in these scenarios?
I haven't really done much for research. You know, I, like I said before, I think me hollering hey bear, you know, that got her guard up right away. I got aggressive. She got aggressive, kind of is the way I look at it. You know, I wish I would have had the mindset to be quiet, to try to back away, you know, try to get behind a tree. You know, even when Brent said, hey, we got to get to the boat, still didn't have the mindset to start getting into protection mode. Like, holy, I should get, you know, we had a bunch of big spruce around us. Like, you know, I should get something like that in between me and her. You know, whether that would have helped or not, I, you know, obviously you don't know, but, you know, just not being aggressive off the start, trying to back away quietly, you know, and whether that was, you know, obviously right back to the cabin, or even if we ended up having to go over the bank down to the river or something like that, just try to get away from that situation a little bit quieter, not so aggressive like I feel like I was. So, you know, it's, you know, they say holler at black bears, you know, don't, you know, be quiet, sneak away from grizzlies. And, you know, I feel like that's how this kind of started, was me being aggressive towards her.
Mm. Yep.
That's quite something, man. I just learned from STARS, learned about STARS from you right now. So that's, I'm writing it down as we're going. But when you're going down the river on the boat after all this went down and you're blinded at that point, your eyes are swollen shut, you're saying, what goes through your mind when you actually heard the heli for the first time? Was that like
I had two kind of big relief situations, you know, or maybe even three. When all three guys came back to me and rolled me over, you know, was a big relief. Hearing Jason Palfy, you know, a guy that I knew, you know, I knew he had a bunch of guys with him, hearing him come to me was a big relief. And then that helicopter flying over, like, it was unbelievable. Like, it was the one guy that was beside me, he kept telling me, it's just till the next step, get to the next step. So first step was, you know, get everything kind of assessed, figure out where I'm at. Okay, you're good to sit here. We're good. So that's step one. Step two, get to the boat. Okay. That step's gone. This next step is a boat ride down to the helicopter. And, you know, hearing that helicopter, that was a huge step. Knowing that I was going to get to a hospital, you know, that night, that we weren't going to have a, you know, 4-hour freaking boat ride ahead of us, you know, that I couldn't see, that I was trying not to puke, that, you know, who knows what would have happened in that 4 hours of that boat ride. But, you know, being able to hear that helicopter and that relief of, okay, it's getting close to being over, I'm getting close to getting professional help, was such a huge relief for sure.
Do you remember much of the heli ride back, or? Was it just go back, into?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that blackout period I have, like when just before she bit me, everything else. I mean, unless somebody else's account of the story is a little bit different, which it definitely could be. It was a quiet chopper ride. You know, I didn't have a headset on, obviously. There was the pilot in the front, one person in the back. You know, I obviously wasn't talking to that person, nothing. And just sitting there and just waiting to land, like sitting in there knowing, okay, it's coming. You know, we're going to land soon. I'm going to be getting to the hospital. You know, I'm going to be able to talk to my wife. Just sitting in that helicopter and that kind of that, you know, the drone of a helicopter, the sound, you know, in my own mind, just I'm almost there. And then getting out, getting into that ambulance and going to the hospital and knowing that, okay, like we're the hard part's done, right? It's just a matter of what they're going to decide that needs to happen to me, right?
Yeah, I guess you'll never hear a helicopter the same way again either, eh?
No.
Beautiful music. So, and then you're in the hospital and the doctors are there and you had your finally made contact with your wife. When were you actually able to see her again? Did she have to come down to Vancouver, I guess, or?
Yeah, she met me in Vancouver. She called, you know, that's how strong women are, right? Like, you know, she gets that phone call. She's got to organize somebody to look after her kids and her dog. You know, she gets a hold of my parents, some of her friends, you know, she gets flights booked for her and my mom. Actually, my mom come with her down to Vancouver. You know, she gets on a flight, she's scared shitless to fly, you know, flies down to Vancouver, coming to her husband that she has no idea what I look like. Right. You know, I don't know, it was probably about 10 o'clock, Sunday morning, they walked in. And, you know, that I started getting emotional then, you know, everything was just about getting the, you know, getting to the next step, getting to the next, you know, to the helicopter, getting, you know, just kind of that fight mode. But then when she showed up, when she walked in, you know, that's when I actually, you know, started getting emotional. I was like, holy crap, like, this is real. This is, you know, things started to set in then. And yeah, so she got that phone call, got hung up on more or less, and yeah, just scary for her, you know, my three kids, you know, them not knowing what dad looks like, them going through all that, like, yeah, like we talk about PTSD, you know, for me, but, you know, it was for everybody. You know, we talked earlier about Lyle Wood. I remember talking to him from the hospital. He was heading out doll sheep hunting the next day. So, you know, he knew my story. He had my pictures. You know, we had been in contact and, you know, he's heading to the mountains. You know, he's flying up, you know, not able to take bear spray with him or nothing, and heading to the mountains right then and there. So, you know, he was quite nervous about it. I talked to him a little bit about it before he even went. And, you know, a pile of my friends that have been back that do sheep hunt, you know, it brought a lot of, you know, it brought a lot of people to take a step back. You know, you hear about it. I was one of those guys, I've spent my whole life in and around the bush, and, you know, it's not going to happen to me, right? It's, I'm aware of my surroundings. I'm always watching. You know, I feel like I felt like I had my finger on the pulse on a lot of that stuff. And yeah, in a heartbeat that went out the window.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Eh? It's, I've had some bluff charges and, if they would have kept going, it was game over. So it's, I can only imagine what you're going through and what you went through.
Yeah.
You touched on the PTSD, not just for you, but for the family, and you're planning on going back out for this year. What's that conversation like with the family? Like, hey, I'm going to do this shit again.
You know, I think there's more conversation to be had, definitely about it. It's going to be tougher, honestly, I think, for my wife than me. You know, I'm in it. I know what's going on. I'm hiking the mountains. I'm in sheep country. I'm probably happier, you know, happiest place on earth to be, right? She's going to be at home, you know, waiting for that bad phone call she got, in 2022. So, yeah, I think we got some more conversations to have about it. You know, I'm all about getting back on the horse, you know, grew up around those things, and that was the model, right? You get bucked off, you get back on it, and, we definitely got to have some of those conversations, and, you know, it's something that, I definitely want to do. We're already planning it, or we're setting dates and working towards it. So kids seem to be okay with it now. They would not look at pictures of me. When the wife got down and seen me, you know, she took a couple pictures, obviously the ones I sent you guys, and my kids would not look at those pictures. I think a lot of their friends, it's crazy how quick those pictures went through the world. Honestly, they were everywhere. And, they had went back to school before I'd got home. The day I think I flew home, they'd went to school that day, and all their friends had seen pictures, were talking about it, you know, and they hadn't even seen pictures of me yet, kind of thing. So, it's crazy how the umbrella, affects everybody and differently. Right. So, my daughter was listening. My wife put me on speakerphone when I phoned from the hospital, or when my phone from the hospital, and our middle daughter was there. And, she looked at Katie and it was like, what happened to Dad? Like, you know, she's part of that initial shock. Right. So, my house is probably going to be a little on edge come September. I don't blame them at all. It's going to be a tough thing, but you gotta move forward, right?
So it's a sat phone with a good plan this time to make it a few extra phone calls back home.
Yeah, I was a couple days ago, I was looking at sat phones and possibly just purchasing one of those. So it's a little bit more connectivity. I don't share my location with her when we're out hiking, so that might be something. She's gonna be watching that website on every step we take. So
yeah, I started doing that with my Garmin. I don't text message anybody anymore. I just text message the wife so she could see where I am when I'm out in the bush. But no, that's incredible, man. I kind of want to turn this back to Kyle, because Kyle's got a unique tie-in with this story here. He was not far away from you while this was all going on. What was that like coming out, Kyle?
Yeah, I heard about it, I think, pretty early on. I'm not sure if Daryl Hosker or Josh Hamilton or somebody reached out and told me what had happened. And I was in the area, obviously unbeknownst to us, and I think not too far from you, actually, from what I understand, if I got my, I guess, my bearings straight there. And we were in there, and we seen a ton of bears there, too, as well. We were watching three big bears. I guess it was probably a sow and two really mature cubs that were just going nuts, just digging up. They just looked like bulldozers, just moving dirt. It was incredible. Did see quite a few bears on that trip. But it was interesting that, we flew out, and I heard about it shortly thereafter. And it was about that time where I'm sure we're in there the same time you were. So it was kind of crazy. And it's funny that it's come full circle. I'd seen the pictures, because the pictures were getting circulated. I think Josh maybe sent them to me, or Daryl did. And I heard your name at the time and everything, but I didn't really put two and two together. And then when Josh reached out about the podcast, it was a pretty interesting tie-in. So, but it did hit pretty close to home, because I came out and I heard, like, shit, somebody on that same trip in the same area had just gone through this. And it was just, I'd heard the whole story. I remember all of it when you're telling it. I'd heard lots of that, obviously not the nuances, but pretty crazy. So just super glad you came through it. Unscathed is not maybe the right word, but you did pretty well, and you got some pretty freaking cool stories to tell as well.
Yeah, I've turned into that guy. You go somewhere or whatever, and sitting on the hockey bench playing hockey here this winter, and I wear the full bubble because a little worried about the face. And I was cleaning it off there one time, and the guy looks at me and goes, "Why do you wear that thing?" I'm like, "Oh, I got attacked by a grizzly bear." And he's like, "Holy crap, you're that guy!" Like, I hear that all the time. It's, "Oh, you're that guy." Get a t-shirt made with it. Hey, I'm that guy.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool story, but it's probably not worth the price of admission, right?
Yeah, it's a cool story now. You know, I hope nobody ever has to go through it. You know, I hope that you know, something happens with these grizzly bears, as many as we got. Like, it's crazy how they're everywhere. You know, it seems like every year there's close calls. And, you know, and then of course my situation pops up, and, you know, hopefully it is a bunch of close calls you hear about, and nobody else gets touched again. But, yeah, they're everywhere though. You got to be prepared.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. And, yeah, we'll grab some info from you, that starter stuff. We'll post that to the website. And, you know, maybe if you don't mind, you can kind of share sort of that process and what that's, you know, I had a quick look on the website like Greg did while we're talking here, but get a bit more details on how that works. And I think that, you know, that's something we could share with our sheep hunting community. I think that's an important resource, and it's going to save someone's life one day, no question.
Yeah, you bet. And I'm sure Stars would be happy to, you know, to join you guys at a, you know, one of the shows one day, you know, have them set up. They were, you know, when I was talking to them about it, I'm like, I cannot believe how I haven't heard of you guys. Like, this fits our community so well. You know, we got to get them out there. We got to get people talking about them. And, yeah, I got a lady's information I'll share with you and stuff. And, yeah, everybody should look them up and see how they can do to help.
Yeah, I appreciate it. So, okay. So here we are, 2 years post the accident. So 42 inch ram this year, is that what we're looking at or what?
Yeah, exactly. It's gotta be, right? I've gotta have paid my dues by now.
I gotta get out of this club. If there's sheep hunting karma, man, you've paid your dues, you're due for a 42 incher for sure. So
yeah. Fingers crossed. I'll let you guys know as soon as they get out of the bush how it went.
Yeah, awesome. Well,
awesome.
Appreciate you, Justin. Appreciate you doing this. Appreciate you sharing the story, and really cool to hear the experience. Not cool to live through it, but cool to hear about it. And I think that I learned a lot from this podcast. I'm sure a lot of our listeners will too. And yeah, just amazing, man. I love seeing the smile on your face. And it might seem a little bit weird, but you're still a pretty good looking guy that got fucked up by a bear. I'll say that. So,
well, thank you. Thank you very much.
But no, really, really appreciate you coming on the podcast, and look forward to hearing how your fall goes, and hopefully see you up north, the Northern Fundraiser in February.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you very much for having me.
Good night.